आय धोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू अ भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। नाउ वी आर कमिंग टू द लास्ट सेक्शन ऑफ द भगवद्गीता वेर कृष्णा विल फोकस ऑन भक्ति। सो इन द प्रीवियस सेक्शन वी डिस्कस्ड अबाउट हाउ कृष्णा टॉक्स अबाउट कर्म योगा विद द वर्णाश्रम फ्रेमवर्क, then spiritualizing that karma yoga by offering, by working for his pleasure, then swakarmana tam abhyarcha, by working for worshipping him. Then we discuss about gyan yoga, and then Krishna talked about 18.57 how 56-57 how whatever level one may be at, one can practice bhakti yoga and elevate oneself. So let's continue with 18.58 now. So 18.58 we see over here, Machitta sarva durgani mat prasadat tarishyasi atha chetvam ahankaran nashroshyasi vinangshasi. So this is one of the most directly indicative verses in the Bhagavad Gita for the phrase Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people ask this question, where does this Krishna consciousness term come from? It doesn't seem to be like a very directly Vedic term. Consciousness seems to be like a modern concept. But machittaha, mat is referring to Krishna, chittaha is consciousness. So machitta, and Krishna is very directly telling, if you become conscious of me, machittaha sarva durgani, durga is obstacles, all obstacles you will overcome. How? Mat prasadat, by my mercy, what will happen? Tarishyasi. Tarishyasi means you will cross over all obstacles. You will go beyond all obstacles. Atha chet tvam ahankaran. If, however, because of ahankar, because of pride, you do not do this, then what will happen? Nashroshyasi vinangshasi vinangshasi. You will be lost. If you don't hear me out of arrogance, you will be lost. So here we see that Krishna is demonstrating, instructing by contrasting. So this is it is 18.2058 is direct reference to what will happen by practice of Krishna consciousness, what will happen by lack of practice of Krishna consciousness. This can be phrased as, with Krishna we flourish, without Krishna we perish. So Krishna has done this repeatedly, 3.31-32 as well as 4.39-40 both talk about faith. Yetvaita dabbesuyanto and ye me matamidam nityam anutishthanti manava. These are 31-32 and shraddhava labate jnanam and agyascha shraddhadhanascha. So there Krishna is contrasting by saying that you'll get one result if you have faith in me, and you'll get another result if you don't have faith in me. And then after that in 9.25 also Krishna is talking, is contrasting, where famously he says that yanti deva pratadevan pitrunyanti pitravata bhutanyanti bhuteja yanti madhyajino pimam. So depending on whom we choose to worship, we will get a result accordingly. So now instructing by contrasting indicates that Krishna is giving us choices. The Bhagavad Gita is not so much a book of commandments. It is a book of choices and consequences. Choices. Okay, these are the choices. This, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. And depending on what you do, accordingly you will get a result. So then choose what you want to do. Choices and consequences. So here Krishna is telling, if you become conscious of me, machittaha sarva durgani, all obstacles mat prasadat. So the word prasadat has come in the Bhagavad Gita earlier. Prasad means mercy. Mat prasadat tarishyasi. The word tarishyasi means actually float over almost. Krishna has used a similar word when we talk about surrender to him in 7.14, when he says mame vaye prapadyante maya metam taranti te taranti. Taranti means to float over. So the material ocean is a dangerous ocean, and we can easily sink into that ocean. But by Krishna's mercy, we'll float over it. So how Krishna has talked about crossing the material ocean also famously in Tesham aham samuddharta Mutyu samsara sagarat aham samuddharta mutyu samsara. I am the deliverer from the ocean of material existence. So what does this actually mean when Sri Krishna says, you'll pass all obstacles by my grace? Actually, material world is a place of obstacles. It is not that when we become devotees, suddenly some magic wand is blown and obstacles go away. Now, whether we are devotees or whether we are non-devotees, obstacles are there for everyone. The difference is in attitude. The difference is in consciousness, in understanding what purpose the problems serve. So for a devotee and a non-devotee, the problems serve different purposes. So suffering will come to all. Non-devotees get suffering, and that suffering simply leads to frustration. Whereas for a devotee, suffering leads to realization, renunciation, and devotion. So let's understand this difference between the two. What do we mean by problems or suffering? It essentially means that we have certain plans to do things, and by that we want to get enjoyment. So it's basically about enjoying. And as souls, we are Anandamaya, we are Satchitananda. So happiness is a part of the nature of the soul. But unfortunately, this nature gets distorted when the soul forgets that I am actually a part of Krishna and tries to enjoy at the bodily level because of misidentification with the body. So then the enjoying nature becomes limited to the material level. And there are many obstacles which come at the material level to our plans for enjoyment. So, because for a materialistic person, material life is the only life. There is nothing beyond material life. And therefore, material enjoyment is the only enjoyment. And if there is no enjoyment possible at the material level, then there is no enjoyment at all. So, when there are problems which obstruct or even destroy material enjoyment, destroy the possibilities for material enjoyment, then the end result is complete frustration, is disappointment. So that's how a person gets blocked and trapped. Person gets lost because of not understanding that there is an alternative, better way of enjoyment possible. Materialistic people think that okay, material track of enjoyment is the only track of enjoyment available for them. And when the enjoyment is not possible on that track, then there is simply misery. Simply misery. So, on the other hand, for a devotee, there is understanding that there is material enjoyment, but there is a higher, richer enjoyment, spiritual enjoyment. That is actually, when we serve Krishna and please Krishna, we automatically get happiness by that. So, that is the purpose and perfection of life. So, now, for a non-devotee, because material enjoyment is the only form of enjoyment, when the enjoyment at the material level is frustrated, then it leads to, is obstructed, then it simply leads to frustration. That frustration can lead to, people may go into alcoholism, they may become depressed, they become violent. You know, when that violence is directed towards others, people beat others, shout at others. When their anger, their frustration is expressed externally, it comes out as violence. And when their anger is expressed, their frustration is expressed internally, then that may lead to self-pity, inferiority complex. It may lead even to suicide. So either way, it leads to misery. So now for a devotee, when there are problems, that means on the material track of life, there are obstacles. So what does it lead to? It leads to realization, renunciation, and devotion. Let's understand these three. Realization. Realization means that a devotee understands that actually what the scriptures are telling is true. That when the scriptures say this world is a place of misery, I'm experiencing it now. So for a devotee, that which scriptures are telling is the reality of this world. The devotee understands this is the reality. So realization means, as we have discussed earlier, to understand that to accept as a reality that which the scriptures are telling is the reality. So that this world is a place of misery, devotee gets realization. And from the realization comes renunciation. Renunciation means devotee understands, you know. Yes, I cannot go about trying to be the controller and enjoyer. I have to be the servant. Whatever situation Krishna will put me in, I will serve him in that situation. So there is a renunciation that comes. Renunciation of what? This renunciation is not frustration. Renunciation is actually the understanding that I cannot be the enjoyer or the controller. But that doesn't mean I can't be the servant. And as a service, I may try to plan and do the best service possible, but still I am a servant. So that renunciation means giving up the enjoying mentality, controlling mentality. And then when we become fixed in the understanding that we are servants, then we see that actually through service I get greater happiness. If I just focus on this idea that Krishna, I am your servant, please guide me how I can serve you. Then that ad service attitude brings so much peace and even in the long run pleasure. So that's how we get devotion. We see, yes, Krishna is always my master. Krishna is always there to guide and protect me. And no matter what happens, Krishna will never leave me. So what happens is our attraction to Krishna increases. So in this way, for a devotee and a non-devotee, both problems come, but the response is huge. There's a world of difference. For a non-devotee, the response is simply frustration. For a devotee, it is renunciation, realization, and devotion. Now, our realization, renunciation, and devotion. In that sequence. Now, after this, further, let's look at it. Now, when we say that we transcend problems, so transcending problems means not letting the problems dominate our consciousness, but becoming Krishna conscious. So transcending problems means what? Problems are there, but we don't let the problems fill in our consciousness. So as it is said over here, if I am next to a skyscraper building, then I am very tiny and the building seems to be giant. But if I am an airplane, then from the point of view of the airplane where I am, the giant skyscraper also appears to be small. So like that, when we think that we are alone, then we feel ourselves tiny. I wonder how will I deal with the situation. But when we become connected with Krishna, we understand that Krishna is the greatest and he is on our side, he is with us. Then we don't feel puny and tiny. Yes, we are puny and tiny in front of Krishna, but we don't feel puny and tiny in front of the problem, because we understand that yes, the problem will be tiny for me, but not for Krishna. Krishna is with me and he will help me deal with this. So transcending the problems means we don't let the problem dominate our consciousness. In the 7th canto, 9th chapter, are the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj to Lord Narasimhadev. And before that, in the 8th chapter towards the end, are the prayers by the devatas to Lord Narasimhadev. These devatas' prayers were unsuccessful in the sense that they didn't satisfy and pacify the Lord. They were successful in the sense that any attempt to glorify the Supreme Lord leads to purification. In that sense, they were successful, but they didn't satisfy the Supreme Lord, they did not pacify him. It's Prahlad's prayers which pacified the Lord. So there, when Indra offers prayers in 7.8, then 7th canto 8th chapter, so there he says, my dear Lord, because of Hiranyakashipu's power and his cruelty, he had started dominating our heart, and because of which we couldn't think of you, worship you, or perform sacrifices for your pleasure. Now that he has been killed, now that you have very mercifully killed him, now our hearts will become free from this domination, and we will be able to love and we will be able to continue our devotion, our service to you through sacrifices and other duties. So in contrast, we see Prahlad Maharaj says that actually whatever happens, I am completely fixed in your service, my dear Lord. So he says that also, I'm not concerned about the miseries of material existence. I'm not concerned about I'm not concerned about anything. I simply want to glorify you, my dear Lord, and I want to get others to glorify you also. So we don't see in Prahlad's life that he, because Hiranyakashipu was such a, we could say in modern language, terrorist, a mega terrorist. He was, today's terrorist may terrorize a city or a country, but Hiranya Kashipu was terrorizing the whole universe. And as a terrorist, what happened to him? What did the Lord do? The Lord basically killed him effortlessly. And but when he was there, and Prahlad was staying in the same house, and he had to bear the brunt of the anger of Hiranyakashipu, and he was tormented and threatened and insulted and attempted to be assassinated. But through it all, he remained determined. So how could he remain so determined? Because his consciousness was fixed and absorbed in Krishna. Narasimhadev, he was worshipping Lord Vishnu. So that Lord Vishnu was remained fixed in his consciousness. It was not that Vishnu became displaced and Hiranyakashipu came in and he was fearful. So this is the difference between mixed devotion and pure devotion. So for a devotee, when there are problems, if the problems start troubling too much, then what it indicates is that we are not sheltered in Krishna properly. The more we take shelter of Krishna, the less the problems will shake us. And the less the problems shake us, the more we will be able to stay calm and deal with the problems better. So we don't let the problems dominate our consciousness. And as it is said over here, that don't tell Krishna how big our problems are. Tell the problems how big Krishna is. Remember, Krishna is the biggest, and nothing can stop him, nothing can thwart him. So by his mercy, we can deal with any situation and every situation. And now a significant point is, a devotee, Prabhupada writes this actually, a devotee may be perplexed, but he is never discouraged. So what is the difference between perplexed and discouraged? So Prabhupada writes in a Bhagavatam purport, perplexed means indecisive. Indecisive means, oh, should I do this, should I not do this? Maybe I want to do this, but probably it is not good for me to do it, I don't know. So perplexed means that, okay, there is this problem. How will I deal with the situation? How will I move forward? So even for a devotee, sometimes it may happen that devotee, it may not be very clear about how one should go ahead and serve Krishna. Srila Prabhupada faced this several times in his life. You know, he had worked so hard to build a league of devotees. And then just when his mission started to seem to be picking up nicely, at that time there was a sort of conspiracy against him. And he was practically thrown out from the place which was going to be his international headquarters in Jhansi. So at that time, what was Srila Prabhupada going to do? So it is not that just because somebody is a pure devotee means that every single step is completely clear and the road from here to glory is straight and clear. No, that road will also be revealed by Krishna to Prabhupada as, okay, now this situation, do this. So Prabhupada also uses intelligence, and he said, okay, you know, Indians are not taking this message seriously, so let me go to America and preach. In America also, he found that people seemed to be satisfied in their own daily pleasures and did not want anything higher. So then he went to the people who were rejecting those things and seeking something higher, that were the hippies. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada went and he struggled also. But at point of one time, Prabhupada was staying in the Bowery, and then his room partner, he took drugs and he went mad. So at that time, Prabhupada had to practically for his life, this person who got a drug induced madness, he came to attack Srila Prabhupada. And at that time, Prabhupada had to practically leave immediately to save his life. And then he came out on the streets, and there were hippies lying on the ground, senseless because of having taken drugs overnight. And there were some bums lying here and there doing nothing. There was birds flittering around in the trees. And Prabhupada realized he was just as homeless as all of them. In fact, more, because they were at least homeless and that's how they were habituated to be living. Prabhupada had come for a purpose. So it is not that Prabhupada was without hope, or Prabhupada was having some unrealistic hope. No, Prabhupada had the realistic hope based on the understanding that Krishna is my protector. So he continued serving. Okay, then he found out, okay, there was this person in my program who used to come. Maybe I can call him, and then maybe we can work out some other place for me to stay. So Prabhupada kept moving forward. So perplexed means not knowing how to serve. Discouraged means not feeling like serving. So a devotee may be perplexed because sometimes life becomes so complicated that we can't understand how should I serve at this particular point. What should I do? But a devotee is never discouraged. That means a devotee always understands that Krishna is my well-wisher and the best thing that I can do in any situation is serve Krishna. Serve Krishna. So serve Krishna means that we use all our senses, all our resources, all our wealth in serving Krishna nicely. And in this way, we can move forward in our spiritual life steadily, strongly. So, machitta sarvadurgani matprasada tarishasi. By my mercy, you will cross over all obstacles. So, if you just become Krishna conscious, the problems will come and they will perplex us, but they will never discourage us because we know Krishna is with us. Pratachetam ahankaran. If ahankara, so ahankara essentially means that I am great. In this context, this means that I am big enough to solve any problem that comes to me. I don't need anyone else. Atachetam ahankaran nashroshyasi. That means if a person thinks that I know good enough, I don't need any help from anyone, so I don't hear Krishna, then vinangshasi, one will be lost. Because what will happen? When I don't hear anyone, that means I hear my mind. Because the mind is already there inside and the mind is already working to drag us down, to make our life miserable. So, the mind is there to drag us down and we desperately need protection so that we are not dragged down by the mind. Now, after talking about this, about how Krishna or without Krishna we suffer, nashroshyasi vinangshasi. So, it's not that Krishna is a vengeful God, but rather Krishna gives us as much facility as is possible. So, for example, it may happen that a devotee, say, is trying to serve Krishna, and at that time the devotee faces severe problems, and those problems make the devotee's hold on the process of Krishna consciousness weak. And at that time the devotee starts reading various different ideas from different people, and trying to make an amalgam that is suited to oneself. So sometimes devotees have the idea that, you know, we should not read any books other than Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said books are the basis, and he said my books are enough. So there's no need for reading any other books. But there are other devotees also who say that actually Prabhupada told his disciples to write, and it is a tradition within our tradition to write. Within our tradition means since the time of the Goswamis, and if you look at the Madhva Sampradaya, since the time of Madhvacharya, it's a tradition for some people, some scholarly people, some literary increased people, to be writers. So now in the past, the people would write just for Indian audiences, you know, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishwanathachakravarti Thakur. They would write primarily for an Indian audience. They didn't expect the soldiers to leave their profession and come and stay with them. They may want to correct whenever some correction is required, and they may themselves be willing to accept correction also whenever it is required. But overall, they would recognize that this is the way they will be able to move forward in life. So here, Machitta Sarvadurgani, this is not a call for social observation or social interaction necessarily. But the more we become conscious of Krishna, the more our vertical relationships become strong, and the more the vertical relationship becomes strong, the more it gives us tolerance and patience and persistence in our vertical relationship. And once the vertical relationship is strong enough, then we can draw back and become situated calmly, steadily, and act intelligently in our material life also. On the other hand, if our vertical relationship is not strong, then we become like a small boat in a giant ocean, in a impossibly vast ocean, with giant killer waves coming from all directions. We may be able to survive those waves for a few moments, but eventually we will succumb to them. So therefore, it is important for every person to recognize that I shouldn't make my consciousness of Krishna conditional to a problem-free life. That means it is not that when my life will become problem-free, then I will start becoming conscious of Krishna. No. Actually, when I become conscious of Krishna, then my life will become problem-free. So it's important, it's a very vital difference to understand if we want to become steady in our devotional life. That machittaha sarvadurgani matprasadat rishyasi. So actually mat prasada by Krishna's mercy. So how does a devotee get all these sweet things, all these wonderful gifts? A devotee gets these gifts by the mercy of Krishna. Because the devotee is dedicated to Krishna, therefore everything that is emanating as a part of the Mahabharata comes into the ears of Parikshit Maharaj, who is a eager devotee. And he also becomes enthused to speak more and more on seeing the enthusiasm of the on the enthusiastic reciprocation of the Supreme Lord, the merciful encouragement of the Supreme Lord. So in this way, the Lord enables the devotee to transcend all problems and move higher and higher towards Krishna. So now after describing this, Krishna will elaborate on the second part. Vinankshasi. If you do not become conscious of me, you will lost. So how will one be lost? We say there are so many people who are godless, so many people who are not conscious of God, and still they are continuing to live quite normally. So where is the question of vinankshasi? That Krishna will answer in the next two class verses. So let us look at the next two verses now. So before we go there, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport here that one should note very carefully that one who is not in Krishna consciousness is losing himself in the material whirlpool, in the ocean of birth and death. A material whirlpool means that a whirlpool is a body of water, is a part within a river or ocean where once a person goes in, tuck, one gets sucked down. Similarly, in the material world, there can be desires come, agitations come, frustrations come, and one gets completely sucked in by them. And they keep us in the cycle of birth and death. So now Krishna, the same word ahankara was used in the previous line also. Tachetam ahankara na shroshyasi. So Krishna will describe what happens when ahankara is there, how vinankshasi takes place. Yada ahankara mashritya mayotsyaiti manyase nithyaisha vyavasayaste prakritistvam niyokshati. So instead of taking ashray of me, if you take shelter of ahankara. Ahankara means I am powerful, I am strong, I know what to do and I'll do it myself. Ahankara mashritya nayotsya iti manyase. If you think that I will not fight, nayotsya. Mithyaisha vyavasayaste. Mithyaisha. Mithyaisha means this is all false, somebody consider. Vyavasayaste. So, vyavasaya is determination. Determination will come falsely directed. And prakritistvam niyokshati. Material nature will engage you. So, Prabhupada explains that Arjuna was a military man and was born of the nature of Kshatriya. So he was going to fight, whether it is by Krishna's will or whether by his own independent nature. So we'll discuss about that a little bit later. So what Krishna is telling in the previous verse, he's elaborating here. So we'll recite this verse and then we'll discuss the meaning of both together. Swabhavajena Kaunteya Nibaddha Svena Karmana Kartum Nechasyan Mohat Karishasya Vashopitad. So swabhava jena kaunteya. So born of your swabhava, your own nature, nibaddha. Nibaddha means conditioned or bound. Svena karmana. According to our swabhava, we are inclined, almost bound to do certain kinds of work. And kartum nechasi an mohad. Na ichchasi means not wanting to do. So if you desire now that I will not do it, if you think that I will avoid my swabhava nirakta karma, the karma that is there according to my swabhava, then what will happen? Karishasya avashopitat. Helplessly, you will be forced to act according to your swabhava later on. So what does this mean? Karishasya avashopitat. So Arjuna, you are saying that killing is bad, and therefore you will not fight. This is what you are thinking, but you are a Kshatriya. And a Kshatriya, it is in your nature to fight. So if you say that you will become a renunciate prematurely and you will go into the forest and live in the forest, and then when you think as a mendicant you will go and beg for alms. Now when you go for and beg for alms, at that time you go and ask for alms and somebody says, no, go away. And what will happen? You will become enraged and you will take out your sword and you will want to attack that person. Because for a Kshatriya to be rejected like that, refused, rejected, it is almost impossibly insulting. And that's why the way the Pandavas were dispossessed and their wife was dishonored, it was an enormous insult for them. Enormous insult. So here again, the point which Krishna makes is that we all have to act according to our nature. So he says, you are thinking that you will not act according to nature, you will not fight now, but later on you will be forced to fight. Kashyas Karishyas say, avasho pitad, avasho, helplessly. So now here you have to be very careful. Krishna is talking about swabhava, he is not talking about vasna. Vasna has to be regulated. What does vasna mean? Vasna means passion. So for example, when a man and a woman, man sees a woman, woman sees a man, the natural attraction. Now it is not that just because a man feels attracted to a woman feels attracted to man, you know, they should act on that attraction and they should unite. No, there is the system of marriage by which this is regulated. So that is different. Vasanas have to be regulated. And Krishna has talked about that very strongly when he has said repeatedly in the Bhagavad Gita that one has to control one's senses, one has to regulate one's desires, one has to discipline oneself. In 3.36 to 43, the whole section is talking about conquering lust. So this swabhava does not refer to the desires which are induced by lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion. Actually, it refers to not vasna but vritti. Vritti means our innate psychophysical tendencies, our nature. So there is a Brahmana nature, Kshatriya nature, Vaishya nature, Shudra nature. So our nature is one of these, and acting according to this nature is indispensable. We have to act according to this nature. Whatever be our nature, we'll act according to it. So it is now even while acting according to nature, we have to act in such a way that by higher direction we get purified. So Kshatriya has a tendency to be chivalrous, to protect, to fight. So actually a Brahmana accepts charity, whereas Kshatriya takes taxes. The difference. So now a Kshatriya has to take taxes, a Kshatriya has to rule, but then all that ruling has to be done according to dharma. There is a Raja Dharma which is given in the scriptures and which is again reiterated in the instructions by Bhishma to Maharaj Yudhishthir in the 12th and the 13th parvas of the Mahabharata, in the Shanti and the Anushasan parvas. So the Mahabharata does talk about this Raja Dharma, and the Kshatriya has to also regulate, but that regulation is more to direct one's swabhava. It is not to reject one's swabhava. So there is a direction and there is rejection, or there is repression. Repression means a Kshatriya has a nature, so Vaishya say has a nature to be industrious and to earn money. So industrious doesn't mean only hard working, it also means, you know, working in a way in which one can produce artha. Artha is not just money, it is holistic prosperity. Of course, it is expressed itself as money also primarily. But now if a person who is a Vaishya nature is told to live like a Brahmana, then that person will be miserable. As a Brahmana who is supposed to count, who is supposed to study Shastra and teach Shastra, the Brahmana will be, while studying Shastra, will be thinking, okay, this book, if I sell it, how much money will I get? Well, that is not the purpose. You know, when we have got Shastra, if we are doing book distribution, it is different. But when we are studying scripture, that is not the focus is not that time, that sort of thing. So we have to recognize that we all have natures and we need to act according to our nature if you want to become purified. So swabhava jena kaunteya, Arjuna, you have your swabhav, act according to your swabhav, and then you will become purified. So kartum nechasi anmohad, even if one says I will not act, but still I will be forced to act. So what is happening over here? Krishna is telling Arjuna that as a Kshatriya you will have to fight. Now in one sense, if Krishna is telling Arjuna that you will have to fight and you will fight, then what is the point of speaking the Bhagavad Gita? So what would have happened is Arjuna would have said, now I will not fight, but then eventually he would have taken up weapons even if he decided to become mendicant. So if Arjuna's nature was to fight and he was going to fight surely sooner or later, then why does Krishna have to spoil the whole Bhagavad Gita? It is so that he can fight in the proper time, place, circumstance, can fight in proper consciousness. So a soldier on the war front shoots an enemy may get a medal for that. That soldier gets angry in a petty quarrel back at home with a neighbor and then shoots the neighbor. That soldier may be hanged for that. So there is, why the difference? Because there's now a soldier can't chicken out. A soldier may have to fight when required. So when soldier has to fight when required, but that fighting has the nature to fight, but that nature has to be regulated according to higher authority, in this case the governmental rules. So in general for Kshatriya it is for the scriptural principles. Of course the governmental rules ideally should be according to scriptural principles only. So in this way, this whatever is our nature, if it is directed properly according to time, place, circumstance, then it will lead to our purification and elevation. A Kshatriya fighting a Dharma Yuddha will become elevated by the practice of Dharma Yuddha. This is how things work in spiritual life. And that is the purpose of the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, to enable Arjuna to use Kshatriya propensity in a right way, according to time, place, circumstance, and thereby get elevated. So now, after describing this, Prabhupada writes in the purport that everyone is under the spell of a particular combination of the modes of material nature, acting that way, but anyone who voluntarily engages himself to act according to the engages himself under the direction of the Supreme Lord becomes glorious. So all of us have this opportunity. If we act according to Krishna's will, we can all do wonderful things in his service. Now Krishna will move on to describing, okay, so if we all have our nature, and if we simply act according to nature, then is nature supreme? No, Krishna says actually above nature is the Ishvara, is the Supreme Lord. That he'll describe in this verse. Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. So Ishvara is the Supreme Lord, Ishvara controller. Sarva bhutanam, Jiva can also be called as Ishvara, but here the Ishvara is being referred to as sarva bhutanam. Is situated in all living beings. Where is it situated? Riddeshe arjuna tishtati. Riddeshe, in the region of the heart. So it's a very clear word, Riddeshe. Riddeshe means that the Lord is situated not in the heart but in the region of the heart. And the soul similarly is situated not in the heart but in the region of the heart. Because what we talk about as the heart, we use the word heart in two senses. One is the biological heart and the other is the metaphorical heart. Biological heart is the heart which pumps blood. And now, we say when two people are in love, or on Valentine's Day or something like that, or when Cupid is being depicted. So at that time they show an arrow being shot and the arrow piercing into the heart. So at that time that arrow which pierces into the heart, there's no hole being created in the biological heart. So that refers to the metaphorical heart. And the metaphorical heart refers to the seat of emotions. So when we are saying that Krishna is situated in the heart, what does it mean? It doesn't refer necessarily to the biological heart. It refers to the Krishna is Riddeshe, in the region of the heart. So the soul and super soul are situated next to each other in the region of the heart. And when they're situated in the region of the heart, at that time, say that's why sometimes a heart transplant may happen. When a heart transplant happens, it's like a king sitting on a crown. Or is sitting on a throne. Now if the foot of the throne gets broken or gets weakened, then what happens is the attendants come and bring another throne, and then the king just gets up, that throne is moved away, another throne is brought, and the king sits on that throne. So similarly, the soul is the region of the heart. It's not the soul is attached or bound to the heart. So when the heart is damaged, so the soul just moves aside, and the soul and super soul, that heart is removed, another heart is brought in. And thereafter, the person continues on. The person continues functioning normally, the soul gets resituated in the region of the heart. So, Riddeshe Arjuna Tishtati, then Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani. Brahmayan. Brahmayan means directing. Brahmayan is wandering. Brahman. Brahman means wandering. Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani. So all the living entities are wandering in material existence. So the word Brahmayan is also can also be related with the famous verse which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uses in his instructions to the Goswamis. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. So Brahmanda Brahmite, and all over the universe, Brahman was scripture using the same word over here. And all of the others, the living entities are wandering. Now the word traveling and wandering is a difference. Traveling generally means purposeful. Okay, I'm traveling from here to Mayapur to go to the yatra over there. But wandering means it's aimless. So the living entity's wandering is large. Living entity's journey is largely a wandering, because when my person wanders, thinks, okay, let me just get a mood, go in this direction, get a mood, go in that direction, get a mood, go in that direction. So like that, the living entity wanders here and there and there and there. So similarly, the soul wanders in material existence. That means soul comes in a particular set of circumstances, and based on that, certain desires come in the mind. And when those desires come up, then the soul starts thinking, oh, let me enjoy this. So the soul is born in Punjab, and the soul thinks, oh, parathas are very nice. The soul is born in South India, the soul thinks that, oh, dosa is very nice. The soul is born in some other part of the world, some other things are nice. Like that, what happens is, the soul gets directed according to desires, and all those desires are circumstantial. They have nothing to do with the intrinsic nature of the soul. And according to one's externals, soul gets injected with certain desires, and those desires direct the wandering of the soul, largely speaking. So those desires shape the wandering of the soul. Souls are going this way, that way. Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani. So all the living beings are wandering, and how are they wandering? Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. So Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. Mayaya refers to material nature. So the word Maya can refer to illusion. Maya can also refer to material nature in general. So Maya, Yantra Arudha. Arudha means to be situated on. Krishna has used the word Yoga Arudha. Yoga Aruruksha. In the 6th chapter he uses in verses 4 and 5. When he's talking about the various stages of yoga. So Aruruksha or Munir Yogam Shamaha Karma Karana Uchyate Yoga Arudha Sitasyaiva Shamaha Karana Uchyate Arudha. Arudha means to be situated on. So it is said Lord Vishnu is Garuda Arudha. He is situated in Garuda. So here what is the word? Yantra Rudhani. So he is situated on the Yantra, which is made of Maya, which is made of matter or material nature. So that refers to our body. So Krishna is indicating that this body is like a machine. So it is a yantra, it is a machine. Now what is the characteristic of a yantra? A yantra in and of itself is not conscious. It is mechanistic, it is made of certain components. Those components are brought together and they work according, they serve a particular function, and they generally work according to particular laws. So our legs, say if we have a house, and then we have some supporting structure, say walls or pillars for the house. Now if what comes above becomes too heavy, then the pillars will collapse and this whole house may collapse. So similarly, we have legs, and if a person carries too much weight, then either the legs or the back or something may sprain or even break. So there are laws of how much capacity of weight can be borne, and like that there are different laws. So according to science, the universe is entirely mechanistic. Mechanistic means that it is a mechanism and it works according to laws. So yes, the universe is not mechanistic, but Krishna does refer to the body as mechanistic, as in terms of the machine. But it is not only mechanistic, in the sense that there is an interaction of a mechanism and we could say the supreme mechanic, the person who is overseeing. Krishna has already earlier told Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti in 9.10. So Yantra, Krishna accepts this body as a Yantra, and the soul is using that Yantra. It's like sometimes if a young person is given a bike, then what the young person does is just, for the fun of it, you drive the bike and drive it very fast. And then you move very fast and the bike makes a loud noise and people turn around, who is traveling? Then people get a kick out of it. Oh, I'm getting heads to turn. And people, so you know, often this traveling is just aimless. Go here, go there, just to show off that I have got a bike and I can ride fast. Or if somebody has a car, then people will use the car to do the same thing. Of course, people who are wealthy, they may use their own flight. And especially if somebody can drive a plane, then that person thinks that, you know, now I only developed wings. I'm able to fly now. And then people try to attract the members of the opposite sex, thinking that I'm something special. So anyway, the point is that for pleasure, often people wander around. And so Yantra Rudhani Maya. So like that, the soul is situated on the body and the soul is wandering here and there and everywhere. So the body is like a machine, and the body does function mechanistically, but beyond the body is not alone. Beyond the body, there is a soul, and the soul is conscious. And the soul as a conscious being affects the functioning of the body. How does the soul affect the functioning of the body? Through its desires. Just like if somebody is playing a video game, then the virtual reality that is in the video game, the person who is playing doesn't have any direct connection with that. So that means that is there are some police and there are some thieves, and they are all, the police are chasing the thieves and thieves are trying to elude. So at that time, all that is in the virtual game only. But the person who is playing, say, is playing police, and the person is in the middle, the person is to say, arrest the thief or shoot the thief or whatever. So then the person, through the mechanism of the video game, by pressing a button here, by pulling a lever here, or by moving the cursor here, this way, that way, they can get the policeman to move, and then accordingly, the thief gets caught or thief runs away. So the point is, the connection is through the mechanism. There is an arrangement made. The arrangement is not made by the video game player only. Actually, there is a person who has developed the video game, and that person's intelligence is involved in making the whole setup. And through that setup, this person who is playing the video game, the player identifies with the character in the video game and then plays the game. So similarly, Krishna is telling, he is the Ishvara. He's the Ishvara, and he is overseeing. He's present in the hearts of all living beings. And this world, material world, is like a virtual reality. One of Srila Prabhupada's scholarly disciples, Sadaput Prabhu, Dr. Richard L. Thompson, he's a mathematician, mathematics PhD from Cornell. So he has written a very good book called Maya, the world as a virtual reality. It's quite a intricate scientific book which explains many of the puzzles and enigmas of modern science from the perspective of Vedic science, Vedic insight, Vedic philosophy, Vedic insights, and then shows how the concept of virtual reality, when it's correlated with the concept of Maya, can give you a lot of insights which can help us understand even the scientific worldview better. It's not only that devotees can understand scientific worldview, devotees can understand scripture, but even scientists can understand what are the implications of the scientific worldview better. So, coming back to our verse, we will not go into too much of the technicalities here, but each of us, depending on our swabhava, within this video game, we have been allocated a particular role. So, you know, the thief cannot suddenly become a police and the police cannot become a thief. So, like that, the kshatriya has to act as kshatriya, the brahmana acts as a brahmana, the vaishya acts as a vaishya. So, like that, according to our varana, we act. And while acting according to our varana, if we act properly, then we'll become purified. So this whole system is supervised by the Supreme Lord. And under his supervision, he is situated in the heart, he has set up the whole system, and he is directing the wanderings. So Prabhupada uses the word directing. Actually, there is no direct correlation with the word directing in the Sanskrit of the verse. The Sanskrit of the verse has two basic parts. The first A and B, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hriddeshi Arjutishtati. It says that the Lord is situated in the hearts of all living beings, in the region of the heart. And the second part says, these living beings, Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. So Brahmayan refers to, so actually the word Brahman is very deep. It is, the word Brahman refers to wandering. And Brahmayan refers to causing to wander or causing to travel. So now, is it that the Lord is causing the living entity to travel? Now, is it that the Lord is, say, sending a living entity to this kind of enjoyment or that kind of enjoyment or that kind of suffering? We would normally think, no, we all have free will and the Lord doesn't cause. So then, what is the implication of this verse? Actually, Brahmayan indicates that the Lord is the supervisor. We have discussed earlier about how things happen. The soul is the desirer, the Lord is the sanctioner, and material nature is the executor. So for example, if I raise my hand. Now when I raise my hand, how does this happen? If I go into the scientific analysis of this, it's very complex. You know, it's just, you know, people just don't know how it happens. So there was a Nobel laureate neurosurgeon who did a lot of research into how the body functions, and he, for example, he had some patients, and now we know, scientists know that, say, the body's motor nervous system, say when the hand raises, this function of raising is done through the motor nervous system. And this is connected with a certain area of the brain. So when I'm raising my hand, it is that part of the brain gets activated, and through that the hand gets raised. So now what he did was, he activated that part of the brain externally. That means using sensors, probes and sensors and other such instrumentation, he activated that part, and immediately what happened? The hand got raised. Now when the hand gets raised like this, so he asked the patient, the subject over there, so did you raise your hand? He asked the subject, what happened? He says, my hand went up. Did you raise your hand? He said, no, I didn't raise my hand. He says, you raised the hand. Oh, is it? Then he deactivated that particular signal, and the hand fell down. He says, what happened? He says, my hand fell down. He says, did you put it down? He said, no, you put it down. I didn't put it down. So then afterwards, without any activation from external sense, he asks, okay, raise your hand. He says, raise the hand. Okay, what happened? He says, my hand went up. I raised my hand. And similarly, put your hand down. He says, I put my hand down. That's how we describe it. So now, this seems to be a fairly straightforward experiment. But what exactly does it mean? Now, what he tried is, okay, when this part of the brain is activated, then the hand goes up. But who is the person who is actually activating the hand in the first case? So to explain this, say sometimes a computer may have a printer attached to it, and the printer has a printing hand. Sometimes it's a printing band or printing hand, different words are used for it. So now suppose it's my computer. So normally, say, if I give the print command, then the printer hand will start moving. But sometimes, say, if I am, say, immobilized, paralyzed, or my hands are tied up, literally or figuratively, because I'm doing some other work. So I tell somebody else comes and presses the print command. Then what happens? The printer starts moving. It starts moving. And now I may wonder, in one case, somebody else is pressing the print command and then the printer hand is moving. In another case, I am pressing the print command and the hand is moving. But either case, the person who is pressing the print command, the initiator of the action, is different from the machine. So it's different from the hand, which is printing hand, which is getting moved, and is also different from the machine, which is causing the printing hand to move. So like that, when my hand is moving up and down, the machine, the mechanical activation is happening in the particular part of the brain. But who is the activator? In the first case, it is the neurosurgeon. But in the second case, who is it? So what he tried to do, this neurosurgeon, is he tried to activate different parts of the brain and to see if there is some other part of the brain which when activated, then the person starts feeling that, oh, I am the activator. But whichever part of the brain is activated, it doesn't lead to the feeling that I am the activator. So eventually, there are actually several other, there's Roger Sperry and Eccles and several other neurosurgeons like that. Now they are Nobel laureates, or they are among the top neurosurgeons, and they feel that actually the brain cannot be consciousness, and the entire functioning of the human person cannot be explained only in terms of neurobiology. So they say, so the conclusion of these neurosurgeons is that the brain is like a computer, but it's like a computer, but the programmer, the user of the computer, is outside the brain, is extracerebral. So why are we going into all this science right now? The simple point which we are discussing is that the soul is actually not the activator. So certainly the brain is not the activator. If the brain is not the activator, then who is the activator? So we have discussed earlier how the soul desires, the super soul sanctions, and the material nature executes. So when I raise my hand, how does it happen? It is I am the desirer. Now science will tell us, okay, the hand is raised because of the motor nervous system functioning and everything in the brain, but that is all the execution part only. But before the execution part, there is the desiring part, the sanctioning part, there's the executing part. So science only sees the executing part. It doesn't understand the role of the super soul, because super soul is spiritual, and science largely reduces itself to study of matter only. And then further, it doesn't understand the soul, who is the initiator through the desire. So when we say this, Lord causes the living entity to wander, that means that the Lord sanctions the desires and provides the facilities for the soul to move according to its desires. So just like a video game is set up. Now within the video game, the player can play in such a way that the player wins, or the player can play in such a way that the player loses. So now overall, what we'll say, if there's a gambling casino, you know, or there is a play video game to play, or something like, there's a place where people can play and they can earn or lose points or even money or whatever, then the whole thing is set up by a particular say institution or a particular person or whatever, and then within that everybody else is playing. So when they said Krishna is Brahmayan Sarvabhutani, he is causing to wander, that means that Krishna is providing the overall framework, and within that the living entity is working. So different living entities work in different ways. So Prabhupada makes the point clear, Brahmayan, he doesn't translate, in word-to-word translation, he causes, to wander. But then the sentence translation he explains as directs the wanderings. Why directs the wanderings? Because if we see in a movie, there is a director. The director is invisible, but the director plays a very important role. So similarly, the living entities are directed by the Supreme Lord. So of course, this doesn't mean that the living entities are merely like puppets. They have their free will and they act according to their free will. But the overall framework in which the action takes place, that is so supervised by the Supreme Lord. So if I'm in a human body, I can't start flying like a bird or barking like a dog. If our soul is in a dog's body, the soul cannot suddenly start chirping like a bird. So there is a overall supervision is there. We all have been given our kshetra, jurisdiction, and the Lord causes the wandering of the living entities like this. He directs the wanderings. So what is the significance of this? That will be mentioned in the next verse. That the idea is, okay, we are to some extent controlled by our nature. That was the conclusion of 59 and 60. That we will have to act according to our nature. Prakriti niyoshati. He says, you will be prakriti stvam niyokshati. Material nature will engage you. You cannot give up your nature. But now in this verse, Krishna is telling that actually you and the nature is controlled by the Supreme Lord. And the next verse he will tell, 62, that therefore surrender to the Supreme Lord and then you will be able to actually attain auspiciousness. That we will discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.